नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva saved from Vrikasura. We're reading texts 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Huh? 16, 2? Mm. I didn't know about that one. Mm. Okay. So just read them all together. Sayada pitato jogo nirvinaksha dhanehaya When he becomes frustrated in his attempts to make money and instead befriends my devotees, I bestow my special mercy upon him. This actually reminds us of many of us in this room. We were totally frustrated with the money program, with the whole life program, and then somehow or other we got approached by a devotee, or we approached a devotee, and everything changed. Our whole lives changed. And then all of a sudden the mercy started to flow. Text 10. Tad brahma paramam shukshman chinmatram saranakakam vignayatma taya dhira samsarat parimuchate. A person who has thus become sober fully realizes the Absolute as the highest truth, the most subtle and perfect manifestation of spirit, the transcendental existence without end. In this way, realizing that the Supreme Truth is the foundation of his own existence, he is freed from the cycle of material life. Text 11. Atomam sudara rajam hitanyam bhajate janaha Tatasta Ashutoshibyo Labharaya Shriodhataha Matak Pramatta Bhadan Vismayantya Vajanate. Because I'm difficult to worship, people generally avoid me. Instead, worship other deities who are quickly satisfied. When people receive kingly opulences from these deities, they become arrogant, intoxicated with pride, and neglectful of their duties. They dare to offend even the demigods who have bestowed benedictions upon them. Text 12. Shishuku vacha shapaprasadayo isha bhamavishnu shivadaya sadhya shapaprasadunga shivo brahmana chachutaha. Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and others are able to curse or bless one. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are very quick to curse or bestow benedictions, my dear king, but the infallible Supreme Lord is not. Text 13. Atra chodharantimam itihasam paratanam vikasuraya girisho varam tatapa sankatam. In this connection, an ancient historical account is related concerning how the Lord of Kailash Mountain was put into danger by offering a choice of benediction to the demon Vrika. Text 14. Vrikko namasura putra shakunek patinaradam jishvashu toshum papracha diveshu trishu durmati. The demon named Vrika, a son of Shakunis, once met Narada on the road. The wicked fellow asked him which of the three chief gods could be pleased most quickly. Text 15. Saha devam girisham upadava shusi jasi yolapabhyam kunadoshabhyam asutushati kupyati. Narada told him, "Worship Lord Shiva and you will soon achieve success." He quickly becomes pleased by seeing his worshipper's slightest good quality, and quickly angered by seeing his slightest fault. And text 16. Dasa shapanayostushta stuvator vandinoriva aishvaryam atulam dhatva tata apasisankapatam. Translation. He became pleased with ten-headed Ravana and also with Bhana when they each chanted his glories like bards in a royal court. Lord Shiva then bestowed unprecedented power upon each of them, but in both cases he was consequently beset with great difficulty. Purport. Ravana worshipped Lord Shiva to gain power and then misused that power to uproot the Lord's residence, sacred Kailash Parvata. On Manasura's request, Lord Shiva agreed to personally guard Bhana's capital, and later he had to fight for Bhana against Sri Krishna and his sons. Y'all want to repeat one? Might as well. We'll just repeat that one. Dashasya Bhanayos Tushta Stuvator Vandino Iva Aishvaryam Atulam Dhatva Tata Apa Sisankatam. Questions? Dasha Asya, with ten-headed Ravana, Bhanayoho, and with Bhana, Tushtaha, satisfied, Stuvataho, who sang his glories, Vandinoho Iva, like minstrels, Aishvaryam, power, Atulam, unequaled, Dhatva, giving, Tata, then. Apa, he obtained. Su, great. Sankatam, difficulty. Vishnu, but I think he said it. Vishnu, the Bhakti Ramanta Swami. So, in these few verses, we're discussing a little bit about Lord Shiva. It's an introduction to Lord Shiva and his dealings with Vrikashura. It's also describing, in this last verse, some other incidences where Shiva made some bad judgment and got himself into trouble, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. But I began by saying that many of us we're very lucky to have that frustration and come to Krishna consciousness. And actually it's describing here about when you're sober, then one can actually attain the absolute truth. So many of us were intoxicated by the material energy, so much so that totally an illusion. But at some point, luckily, we began to question with this frustration, well, you know, where is the real pleasure? Where is the absolute truth? What is this human form of life about? And then we were able to approach the spiritual master and obtain the absolute truth. Many other people that are in the classrooms over there right now, they didn't have to go through all that. They were just born into the movement and got the mercy right away. They're just engaged in devotional service due to, you know, the pious activities and the purity of their parents calling such great souls to come. But there's others too that want a discount deal, that they want to get the cheapest and the best. And they want to approach the demigods, or they want to get some, you know, quick fix of power and enjoyment. But we know, I think most of you know, that if you go to the stores where the, you know, you're getting all the Chinese products. I know that for my tools sometimes, you know, I just need a tool for something really simple. I go to this Freight Harbor. It's all just Chinese junk stuff. You know, the last, you use it twice and it falls apart, you know. And but I'm not, I understand that that's going to happen. But most people, like this Bricasher, he just wants to, he can't afford the expensive brand, the Krishna brand. It's too, like it's Krishna's saying here, I'm a little difficult, you know. It's a little difficult to approach me, and I'm not so easy, you know, to just buy like that. I'm not cheap. I'm a little expensive. So Bhikkhusara skirts that issue, and he starts doing his penances to achieve his fix through Lord Shiva. And when we hear the story, we all kind of, when we think of him, you know, oh, duh, touch your head and see if it works. You know, we always kind of, you know, laugh and you know, think, what a fool. You know, how could anyone so stupid, you know? But when you look at, you know, in the materialists, they're pretty stupid, you know? You know, that Maya's attempt, you know, is attracting them. Here, yeah, lovely, take this, yeah, blood, sweat, tears, get it. And then she, you know, says, okay, now bend over, and she kicks you. And you know, how stupid can you get? So we are guilty of that, all of us, of thinking that we can enjoy. Somehow or other, we're convincing ourselves that temporary fix will satisfy us. But ultimately, she kicks us, and everything's gone. She takes everything away. And so therefore, the sober person will begin to ask questions of where is that eternal absolute truth, the pleasure that I'm looking for. Now, it's describing here the names of a few personalities, but some of the greatest personalities in the universe have this ability to give boons and benedictions and curses and things like that. Fortunately, I think for our sake, there aren't too many of them around right now, because who knows what would happen. But at one time, it's describing here Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and others were able to give these benedictions. But Lord Shiva seems to have a problem with this. He's a little bit too quick on the draw, and he doesn't sieve through and figure out exactly who he's dealing with and what to actually give in benediction. So he gets himself in quite a few situations where it's a regretful situation at the end. So these are some of the stories that are discussed here. That it's not always best to be quickest. I know from my personal experience that I have a tendency to be very fast at doing things. And I might get done quicker than anybody else, but I may have done the wrong thing the whole time, you know. And that's happened before, you know. And like Krishna smacks you on the face. Oh, yeah, you think the quickest is that? Yeah. Huh. And but actually, we can see here Krishna is not quick to act like that. He's very, very careful in his selection of who he deals with and how he deals with them. And we'll talk more about that later. But here in this last little verse, it's described two incidences when Lord Shiva did this make this mistake. The one with Ravana. Ravana was actually the greatest Lord Shiva Bhakta. And somehow or other, he pleased Lord Shiva and got what's called the Atma Linga. It's a special benediction, some special source of power that he was able to conquer the world. And it's described here a little bit about how he misused that, as the demons do. And he gets all puffed up and proud. And then he thought, actually I want the biggest lingam in the world. And that Mount Kailash, might as well just go get that. And so he went and he did his best to rattle it. I guess Lord Shiva and Parvati were there, but she left for a few minutes and came back and felt the shaking of the whole mountain, and then and ran back to her husband. But Lord Shiva put his toe down on the mountain and quelled the whole thing, and Lord Shiva could not do anything about it, the weight of his foot. But later on, of course, Lord Ravana's pride got bigger and bigger and bigger, so much so arrogant, that he actually think he could steal the consort of Lord Ram. And of course, that was his demise. That was the end of it for him, and his kingdom, and all his family, everything was finished. So it was unfortunate. I mean, Lord Shiva didn't expect, you know, that he was going to go and steal Lord Ram's wife. But it was one of the problems that he ran into by giving this benediction to someone who really was not worthy, did not know how to use it properly. Actually, it's described that the worshippers of Lord Shiva, they actually want to be deceived somehow or other. They just have that mentality. But Lord Shiva's business is not to do that. That's not his business. He just gives the boons. But ironically, what happens is that ultimately they end up with this pride and arrogance and greed, and then they misuse it, and they end up destroying themselves in some way or another, just like we read with this Vrikashura. Now, the story of Banasura and Lord Shiva. Banasura also, he was the eldest son of Bali, and he worshipped Lord Shiva from a very young age. And he was able to please Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva gave him a benediction of 1,000 arms. Who wouldn't like 1,000 arms? Boy, get a lot done in a day. You could get that barn cleaned in 2 seconds, right? get kachuris. Boy, the kachuris we could get done in 15 minutes. Anyway, but there was some trouble with that benediction, and Banasura got a little agitated and didn't know what to do with all these arms. He was complaining to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva says, "Don't worry, you're gonna have a competitor that's gonna give you your fight for your life," and so he was happy with that would happen. Meanwhile, one time Lord Shiva was doing one of his dances, and Banasura accompanied him by playing the drum with his 1,000 arms, and I guess it was really, really nice program, because he was so pleased that Lord Shiva said, "Would you like a boon? Can I give you something in return?" And Banasura said, "Sure." He said, "I would like you to guard my kingdom at some point. I want you to guard it, not let anyone in, no disturbances." So Lord Shiva said, "Oh, okay, I'll do that." And it just so happened that Banasura had a beautiful daughter, Usa, who was of marriageable age, and she had a dream one night, and within that dream was this beautiful person, brilliant personality with golden complexion, golden dhoti, and just gorgeous, and completely agitated her heart, and she fell in love with him, but she didn't know who it was. And so her friend Chitaleka noticed the agitation and said, "What's the problem?" She told her friend, and Chitaleka, who had some mystic power, said, "Just describe him, and I'll start painting, and you tell me, you know, describe him, and I'll start painting. Maybe we can figure out who this personality is." And so she starts painting, and she asks, you know, she actually paints different personalities, great personalities that it might be, that gorgeous, you know, gorgeous personality, and some of the Yadu clan, and things like that. And then she starts painting this picture of Aniruddha, and immediately she blushes and becomes all, you know, shy and realizes that this must be who it is. And Chitralekha had mystic powers and flew through the airways, and I wonder what those airways are like. It must be really wonderful. Just hop in there and go anywhere you want. Anyway, she went and picked up Aniruddha and brought him back, and they engaged in some loving pastimes together in her apartment, I guess. And pretty soon the servants realized that some nonsense was going on here, and they could realize that there was some sexual interaction going on, and they informed Banasura, and Banasura burst over there and found them together, and he starts, you know, telling Aniruddha, he threatens him, and Aniruddha stands up, you know, ready to defend his new lover, and he grabs a big iron club, and a battle ensues and everything, and Aniruddha's doing pretty good. I think he's the son of Pradyumna, right? And anyway, he's got some power on his side. And it looks like pretty bad news. But then Banasura, who had another benediction from Lord Shiva, had this Nagapashu, which is a weapon that puts like a noose around your neck and captures you. And so he actually got entangled in this weapon, and was pretty much retained. And then the news got back to the Yadu family that Aniruddha has been captured by this Banasura, and it's very unfair, and they told the whole story. So the whole clan of the Yadu dynasty gets in their chariot and drive over to defend Aniruddha, and a great battle ensues. This was not in Lord Shiva's plan, but Lord Shiva had said, "I'll guard your kingdom." And so now Lord Shiva's having to fight against Krishna and all the Yadus, his friends. And so this is what can happen if you're not, you know, choice on your benedictions and your people. Anyway, it ends up that they throw all these astras, and there's the wind weapon, and it goes, and they put the mountain weapon in front of that to stop it, and then they have let's see, what other weapons were there? I can't remember all the different weapons. And there was a fire weapon, a water weapon, and then finally Krishna throws a yawning weapon, and everybody starts to fall asleep, and then he starts to destroy the whole army. But Banasura, he says, "This is not fair," and he gets angrier and angrier and angry, and he grabs 500 bows, because he has two arms, so now, for 1,000 hands, he gets 500 bows, and he's got 2,000 arrows in each of his bows, and he starts to fight. But Krishna cuts each bow, no problem, all 500 bows are cut, and downs the horses, and they're all on the ground. But then Banasura, he has that mystic power, and he sends this goddess, I can't remember the name, Kotala or something like that, who's naked. And so like everyone's like bewildered, what's this lady doing in the middle of the fight? And even Krishna's like, whoa, what's going on here? And at that time, Lord Shiva takes advantage and shows a Shivajwara, which is a heating astra. It gets hotter and hotter and hotter. Everything gets so hot. No one can even get near it. None of the enemy can get near it. They can't stop it. And so then Krishna finally says, all right, the Narayanajwara. And he throws that and is able to dissipate it. So this was not in the plan for Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, of course, has to humble himself and be very remorseful of what he has caused. So much drama and offenses and everything else that came from this. But we hear here that Krishna is much more careful. And he is not in a hurry. He's been sitting in everyone's heart for time immemorial. He's looking at us. And when we start to turn his way, then he takes special care. And he's the interests and needs of each person he's seen. And as soon as he sees that, oh, there's an interest in knowing the absolute truth. Then he starts to arrange things and starts to direct them to the devotees so that they can become very close to him. It's actually a beautiful thing how actually Krishna does that, that he cares for us so much that even though we've been rascals and left him and play with Maya for so long and done horrible things, that he's willing to arrange the best situation for ourselves. It might not what we think is the best situation, like we heard yesterday. You know, we might not like what the Lord's arranging for us, but he has our best interest in mind. So the devotee, the faithful devotee, will actually respect that and follow that. But sometimes even the devotees get a little impatient. And one time in our movement, some devotees were thinking that, we need a little bit more money. Maybe Krishna isn't giving, or maybe we should worship Ganesh. Actually, devotees started to worship Ganesh. Asked Prabhupada, can we worship Ganesh, and then we'll get our obstacles will be removed, and we'll get money, and we can do all your projects. And Prabhupada said, that's okay, but then you should give, how much was it? He said, 100,000 a month or something like that. That's okay, you can do that worship. And I said, oh, all right. Not such a good idea. So Prabhupada nipped that in the bud right away, that we were playing around with this demigod worship. No way. And Prabhupada just gave us the only way, and that was to simply serve him. But Maya, her temptations go on forever. She still taunts us. And those who are addicted to sense gratification, they will be allured, and they will be think that, this human life is just meant for sense gratification. That is my real business. And it's very, very unfortunate. In the West here, we have the attitude that I really don't even need the demigods. I am the bestower of my own wealth and fortune and everything. It's just my blood, sweat, and tears. It's my endeavor, the American way. I will get what I want. My fortune will be made by me. And so this is the attitude that we're so puffed up that we think we don't need God, we don't need demigods, we don't need anybody except ourselves. But we can see that of course we need our credit cards too. We couldn't do anything without a credit card, could we? Yeah, we couldn't get anywhere. Everything's on credit. So anyway, this is not the way to go. And most of us will find that it does not produce what we want. And we have to, not only do we have to pay up our credit card, but we have to come back lifetimes and lifetimes to pay the credit of all the crazy things that we've done and taken advantage of. And then there's another solution. Sense gratification. Just pour on so much sense gratification that you'll get tired of it. You won't even want anything anymore. And Prabhupada said, that's like pouring gas on a fire. It's only going to flare up more and more. And that was the Rajneesh philosophy that many people took for a while. But Krishna offers the best solution, the perfect escape for the inmates of Kali Yuga. And that is simply to surrender to the spiritual master and to begin to learn how to satisfy him so that 24 hours a day we can simply have on our mind of how to please Krishna. In this way, we become self-satisfied. How many of us would not do the service that we've done in ISKCON again and again lifetimes? And especially when Prabhupada was a planet, we worked so hard. Did the craziest things in the world. But we'd all do it again and again and again because it was so satisfying to the soul. And then we become Atmarama, or self-satisfied. And that's our only business 24 hours a day, is to figure out how to satisfy Prabhupada and to move his mission onward. But we are in a neophyte stage, and we have mixed desires. And we have to overcome those by looking at the goal, figuring out that, yes, ultimately I would like that purity of just not a little for me, a little for you, Krishna, but actually everything for Krishna. And that it's going to take this lifetime for sure, of not having that mixed desire. But we have the process that will deliver that higher consciousness if we just stick to the process and have faith in the process. We can see here that Vikasura didn't really have the faith. He was a so-called devotee of Lord Shiva. He didn't have the faith. As soon as he heard that, oh, maybe Lord Shiva's not what he lives up to, then he had more faith in Narada Muni, actually, you know, because he goes, oh, all right, boom. But we should have that faith that we will achieve the goal. I went to the Baptist church down here at the corner last Sunday. I had made an agreement with the daughter of the pastor there that I would go to his class, if he would come to mine last Sunday. And so he did. He came to mine. We had a nice discussion. But in that class, it was interesting. He started with a story. He was a very good speaker. He started with a story about if you take driving directions, you know, take a right here, a left here, there, and you'll get to your goal. That all works. But if you don't know your starting place, then none of those directions work. And he went on to describe different things. But he said, I could picture that their starting place is fear of God. The whole thing is centered around this fear of the Supreme. And that's what guides them the whole way, is the fear. And I was thinking how different Krishna consciousness is. You know, our starting place is by that approaching the spiritual master and hearing. And from then on, it's the directions are there. There's no, and we're looking ahead of us. We're looking right here of how beautiful the Supreme Lord is and how merciful he is and how forgiving he is and how he's got open arms for us. You know, and so that's our drive is not the fear, but the love can actually develop so much so that Krishna will embrace us at the end. So the devotees are very, very are sometimes approached and said that actually you all are fools. We're saying Vikashira was a fool, but some people say, yeah, you're just foolish. You know, this is all hogwash. You're just reading these books. It's just all mythology. Mythology, as Prabhupada would say. And you don't know what's going to happen. And it's all stuff that, what benediction are you going to get? It's all they say you're going to get next lifetime. You're just betting on that you're going to make it, you know, that you're going to get to be with Krishna. And so it's a test of our faith. Sometimes we meet these people that, you know, are so heavy that it's all, what are you basing this on? But we see that the devotees have the faith because we're getting benedictions right away. We're actually beginning to learn the art of taming these crazy senses that drive us to lust, anger, and greed, all these demoniac propensities like Vikasura has. So we see the results within no time. You know, that people gave up drugs within a day. In the same day they joined, they gave up all four illicit activities in one day. You know, we could give it up. So there are proof that Krishna is benedicting us. He is giving us great boons, and he does care for us. He's arranging everything for us at every moment. And it makes us also free from all kinds of fear, which is prominent in this material world. There's fear at every step. But we know that, okay, if this has happened bad, if that's happened bad, it's Krishna's arrangement. You know, we see it as that way. It's so easy for us to go through this material world knowing that it's all planned out. I just have to exist here, chant Hare Krishna, and keep my faith in Krishna. So it's really, like Prabhupada said, it's sublime. This path is really sublime. And we should take advantage of it. Because we have the person Bhagavat. And we have the book Bhagavat. We have devotees. We have everything. These are our riches. You know, Bricashear is going to, what, he's going to get some power. Robin's going to get this power, this riches and everything. But we've got the real riches. We've got the deepest understanding too of the absolute truth. Our intelligence is satisfied. We don't have to look any further. Everything is here. So we have everything. And we should realize that we will reach that goal with this process. So what else? Anyway, we should try to keep a sober mind and try to see all these intoxicated people as actually great souls. When we go out on Sankirtan, they're just intoxicated. Somehow or other, we have to shake them up a little, give them prasadam. First of all, that, if anyone ever took intoxications before, if you take food stuff afterwards, it kind of sobers you really quickly. And then you can hear a little bit. So we have to give them plenty of prasadam and then give them this knowledge, like just describing there, that of the Sankirtan stories, giving these books out. And it will sober them up, and they'll see that this is the absolute truth, and that we don't have to use this whole human form of life just to go after the so-called riches that Maya is tempting us with. So we should take it as our heart and soul to awaken and sober up as many people as possible so that this material world can become a better place. So anyone has any questions or comments? Do we have a microphone?
Hare Krishna. When you mentioned about the fear, what came to mind was that Srila Prabhupada keeps stressing over and over again that we're conditioned souls. We're subject to the conditions of birth, old age, disease, and death, and that there are the threefold miseries, you know, adiatmic, adibhautic, adidaivic, and that from the highest planet to the lowest planet, they're all places of misery, places of birth and death. And so, although he doesn't use the words to say, now you should all be afraid, but he's saying, you know, get it together, because otherwise you're going to be subject to this. And so in a way, and that's the beginning of the teaching, to dissuade us from our intoxicated, what we think, let me enjoy. And he's saying that if you, Maya is saying, come enjoy, and then slaps us. So, in a sense, although he's not using the word fear, those same messages there, that we're in a very, not a very nice condition.
Yeah, Papa said that we should fear Maya. It's like a razor's edge. But at the same time, we have to develop love and attachment for Krishna. Otherwise, we can be fearful and fearful and think we're the lowest scum on the earth and all this. But if we don't have love for Krishna, then why would he want to embrace us? Even, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he said the most important rule is to love God with all your heart, all your... He must have been a Vaishnava, you know. And not to ask for anything, but to say, well, what do you want? Not my will, but thy will. So he was totally into selfless, pure devotion, and he taught that. Of course, Christians today don't understand their own scriptures in that simple way. You know?
Anybody else? Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. What? Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. I was just thinking, and I hope I can explain myself properly. When you look at these pastimes from the point of achinta bheda bheda tattva, like the simultaneous oneness and difference, in the case of like Lord Shiva here, we understand from the other side that he is playing a role in unfolding Krishna's pastimes. But in his playing that role, there are reactions for him as well. Just like in the next chapter coming up, we would learn about Bhrigu Muni, who played that role, and the result of that, all the brahmanas are no longer, you know, favorable by Lakshmi Devi. So how can we reconcile these two? Like you were talking on the one side of how not to be so like be like Lord Shiva, or like to, he has not been so smart enough per se to think twice before he give benedictions. But on the other hand, if he's doing it as a service to the Lord, then in that, the result of that also is that there are some reactions. So how can we reconcile that?
There might be, like you say, it's a role in Krishna's pastimes, but even in these verses, Krishna says, I'm not like that. You know, he more or less says that this is the better way to go. So, but Lord Shiva, I don't know much about Lord Shiva. Anybody can answer that question more about, of his role in things. I'm not sure exactly what the question is, but anybody understand or have a comment?
And wait, let me see if I can put it a different way. In that, being instrumental in the Lord's service,
right,
as in the case here of Lord Shiva, because these are different things that prompted the Lord's pastimes to go on in the case of Banasura and Ravana. In so doing, there is some reaction for him too, because we also know that Lord Vishnu chastised him, said, you know, don't do these kind of, you know, things again. So, but on the other hand, it's like promoting the Lord's pastimes. So being an instrument takes on some reaction, just like if you have a boxing match and the referee's there, the referee gets some punches sometimes too. So how can we substantiate or not substantiate the position of a devotee like in Lord Shiva's case?
I can't substantiate it. It's just, that's who he is, that's his position. I don't know the deeper meaning behind it all. I'm sorry. Anybody can answer that? I guess you have to ask somebody else.
Thank you very much.